Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hi, Todd Feinberg here after 6. Red Sox coming up at 6:30 right now. The most amazing conversation, I think, that I've had here at WTIC in my 3.5 years, and certainly in the couple of months, few months, that we've been interviewing Brent McCall. He's one of the prisoners, along with Michael Leibowitz, who we talk to regularly. Both has been in prison for close to 25 years. They co-authored Down the Rabbit Hole, How the Culture of Corrections Encourages Crime. And this is Brent picking up. We recorded this earlier. This is Brent picking up a conversation. He just got into it. We got on the phone, and this is the beginning of the conversation. As a follow-up to the last time we talked a couple of weeks ago, when he was talking about his anger, and it just wasn't that connected a conversation. It wasn't that satisfying a conversation. But this one sure makes up for it. Here we go with Brent McCall on WTIC. Is that Brent McCall?
That would be. How are you, Todd?
What's up?
Not much. I've been dreading this call for 2 weeks.
Dreading it? Why?
Well, because I think that we should continue the conversation about my anger, because unfortunately I wasn't 100% forthcoming, and my intention wasn't to deceive you. It was essentially I lack the courage to tell you the whole truth.
Okay, well, let's just assume we've started, because the tape is rolling, so let's just go with it.
All right. Well, if you recall the last interview that aired, we talked a little bit about my anger, and really, it'd be more accurately described as rage, much of my life. And I told you a little bit about, you know, my parents and having a lot of children, and, you know, sort of having this policy of reinforcing bad behavior. And while that certainly played a role in how my behavior developed, as I grew older, the real issue and the thing that I was so reluctant to talk about the last time we spoke was that my rage was rooted in childhood sexual abuse that began, you know, when I was around 7 years old, and it went on for several years. And it was a friend of my mother's, a girlfriend of my mother's, and that really, I'd never dealt with that well throughout my life, and it wasn't until I was well into my 30s that I ever even admitted it to anybody or confessed that something like that had happened.
Were you conscious that it was a dynamic that was driving you in some way?
I think that largely, no. I knew that it was sort of at the root of my anger, but I never, bothered to pursue it. My strategy for dealing with it was always to suppress it. And, that came out in violent behavior and disruptive behavior and acting out behavior that, you know, my parents, I never told them. To this day, they don't know. They're both passed away. And, they just weren't sophisticated enough, I think, to see the signs. And, it affected my ability to trust people. It gave me almost crippling social anxiety, led to bouts of depression, I think. I think a lot of my problems, developing into an adult was rooted in this, you know, this years-long abuse. Even today, I'm 50 years old, and I have a real hard time talking about it without breaking down and getting super emotional.
Oh, but that's awesome that you can.
And here I am, and admitting it on a 50,000-watt radio station.
That's so cool, because that's it seems to me that that's how you gain freedom, and that's probably what compels you to want to talk about it, but I don't know. What compels you? Why do you feel like you owe us this explanation that you didn't give us last time?
Well, I think that a couple of reasons. I understood after we had that conversation that I had repeated old patterns of behavior, that I had once again not come fully clean because of something that was a profound source of shame for me. And, you know, it was that shame that was killing me. And not only was it killing me, it was affecting everybody around me. And, you know, so a part of it was just recognizing old patterns, and part of it was, well, if I'm going to be a man of integrity, I have to tell the truth, even when the truth is ugly and then I'm embarrassed about it.
Well, you know what's interesting about this is there was something unsatisfying about the previous conversation for me, and I didn't sense that there was something unsaid, but still it wasn't satisfying. And now what you've done, and it never occurred to me that these rules, that what you just said about speaking honestly and being honorable, that the value of that is that it requires you to maintain a connection to yourself, to be true inside. And
that's even more important.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing, because that, I think, you know, that's your train being on the track. That's what allows you to move forward. And it's interesting because life is such a fascinating thing, and we're such complex creatures, and the degree to which we have these psyches that are damaged by these experiences is profound, and you can't get free of it if you're not willing to go back and visit. And that's the greatest human courage there is, I think, to go back, you know, to do what you did and take the conversation from 2 weeks ago and want to revisit it, even though you didn't want to. I mean, that's an awesome thing.
Well, you know, I appreciate you saying that. Like I said, it's always been an issue for me. It probably will remain an issue for me. You know, one of the reasons that Mike Leibowitz and I developed such a profound and lasting friendship is because, you know, he mm-hmm. was the first person that I ever told. And he really helped me quite a bit.
Wow, that's amazing that you ended up befriending somebody who could do that for you. So let me just back up a second. If you never told your parents, then how did they come to understand your behavior in life, your rage and your violence and your criminality and your prison?
They never understood it. The reality is that they both died not understanding me at all. And that's... you know, that's an additional regret in my life. But, you know, I never told them because I always thought that, you know, when I was a child, I thought that I wouldn't be believed and, you know, I was ashamed of it and all those things. But as I grew older, I had convinced myself that by not telling them, I was actually protecting them.
Well, and in some way you were, because what a horrible thing it would have been for them to realize that they'd been asleep at the wheel to that degree.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, it was my mother's best friend for years, so, you know, what a betrayal that was. And I just, you know, I had always felt that my mother had dealt with enough in life that she didn't need that added burden. Although at the same time, my behavior was so chaotic and outrageous that I was being a burden in other ways. I just couldn't really see that at the time.
Right, but at least they didn't have culpability. They went to their graves not understanding, which, you know, it is a missed opportunity that you didn't tell them, but it's also, I mean, I think it did serve its purpose in some ways, because what a monumental thing to carry around as a as a parent. But the important thing is that you're living in the present. And, you know, one of the reasons I like interviewing you and Michael Leibowitz and the whole notion of having people whose lives went so astray, you know, 25 years in prison or whatever it is that you and Michael have each served, the rest of us can't fathom. And there's this tendency that I know you're aware of where, you know, we'll hear it from listeners in phone calls and such where they want to discard you and say, because you are this thing, this word, because you are a prisoner, because you're a felon, because you're a criminal, therefore right. they don't have to consider you. And it's almost like there's a connection between some unconscious understanding that you did these things, you got where you are, your life followed this course because you were damaged in some way when you were young. And everybody was damaged in some way when they were young, everybody just to different degrees. And by somehow pushing you away and not being willing to open their hearts to you, that's somehow a parallel to not opening their hearts to themselves. So by you confessing your deepest, darkest secret here on the radio, you're connecting the circuit, you know? It's like, no, you can't run. Nobody can run. We cannot run from who we are.
No, if I've learned one thing.
And we can't run
that.
From who we are by saying, no, I'm not going to consider who Brent McCall is, because he's no good. He's a felon. He's a criminal. But what you're demonstrating to me, my feeling of you right now, is that you're heroic. That you're one of the most impressive people I've ever met, and I haven't even met you except to talk to you on the phone.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. And, you know, one of the things that I think people enjoy believing, though there's very little truth to it, is that there's this stark separation between victims and victimizers. And I'm not trying to minimize anything I did, but I don't think you can fully understand my behavior without understanding that part of my life.
Well, you can't begin to understand it without understanding that part of your life.
I don't know how
often we've talked, but this is the first time I've been able to put two and two together with you at all to feel any sense of understanding who you are and why you're in prison and why you shot a police officer. I mean, it's inexplicable unless you know that you were tortured and that torture got expressed. You know, a damaged psyche expresses that damage out into the world. And it brings it back to your mission and being on the radio in the first place, which is that the role of prison shouldn't be just to put you in a cage, but it should be to let you out of the cage. It should be to let your psyche get cured and to internally have liberty so that you can then go out into the world and be free.
Absolutely. I'll call you right back.
Okay.
The caller has hung up.
You back, Brent?
I am, yeah.
All right, so what do you want to say?
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, one of the things that I find bizarre about prison is that, you know, once you get here, the focus is to break you, you know, because I think that the authorities think that that's the way you force compliance, is to break the prisoner. And the reality is most of the guys that I know here are already broken. The focus of prison should be to fix them.
Well, I want to make sure we don't get lost into multiple meanings of the word broken. That if you're talking about breaking somebody like you break a horse in old westerns, that's my only reference really for that word, is that, you know, a wild horse has to be taught that there is a culture if it's going to be a horse that's ridden, and it has to acclimate to that culture. And in that sense, prisoners are people who refuse to acclimate to culture because of the whatever it is that's driving them. I assume some kind of experience like what you've shared with us today, where the psyche's damaged and it's that damage is manifesting in aberrant and antisocial behavior.
Right, but part of that breaking entails, you know, things that are a bit inhumane. And certainly things that, in my situation, I find, or have found, re-traumatizing. And
you're talking about the things that prison does to you.
Yeah, well, just the whole, you know, if you consider my background, the whole process of a strip search is every time I go through one, it's like being re-traumatized.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know,
yeah, so prison takes you back. Prison rakes you over the coals again. It pulls you back through the damaged part of yourself in a cruel way, not in a healing way.
Right. And you know, as far as counseling for something like this, it's not available in here. You know, they would quickly put me on drugs if I went to the psychiatrist and asked for some. But as far as some meaningful counseling, you don't get that here. That's not what the focus is. I mean, I've had friends.
There aren't are there not volunteers who come in and want to work with people?
Not in that way. You know, there are volunteers, like for the Alternatives to Violence program, but much of that is pretty superficial stuff. It doesn't really, you know, get into the, you know, mining the meaning that you've attached to these events in your life and, you know, those kinds of things.
We're talking to Brent McCall. He's a regular guest and a prisoner in the state system. Do you have siblings? I don't recall.
I had 11. Most of them are dead.
Well, how many are left?
Four.
Okay, and do you have relationships with any of them?
No. I just sort of reconnected with my sister, but I distanced myself from my family when I got locked up because, you know, the whole family dynamic was very dysfunctional. You know, most of my siblings were drug addicts, you know, violent themselves, neglectful of the children they raised. You know, it's not a pretty picture at all.
But the reason I ask is just because you're so intelligent, not just in an intellectual way, but also in a psychological way. You know, your ability to bring yourself to where you are, that you can have this conversation, that you needed to have this conversation, that's just a sign of such depth and power as a human being to me. That, you know, that's something everybody should aspire to become who you are as a human right now. And I just wondered if there's any reflection of that out of a family of 11 kids. Do you see that in any of your siblings' lives?
I had my oldest sister. She was pretty normal, if you know I can use that word, whatever it means. I guess it's for lack of a better word, I would say normal. But currently, I keep in touch with her daughter, my niece, who's you know, helped me tremendously in terms of, you know, supporting me and encouraging me and you know, trying to help me where she can. So knowing her has, you know, the value in that has been immense in my life. And, you know, she's been in my life since around the time my mother died a few years ago. But largely, no, my family, many of them still engage in, you know, drug abuse and, you know, they're chronically unemployed and always
in trouble. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think largely for the same reason that, you know, I, you know, ended up behaving the way I did. It's just that there wasn't a lot of positive reinforcement in my house growing up. It was the, you know.
Yes, but you're suggesting that You're suggesting that there were problems in the household that were enormous, separate from what this woman did to you.
Well, there was. So, right, this just added insult to injury, for sure. You know, not everybody...
Well, so how do you feel now that you you came back and conquered the dread and made the confession? Does it feel like a good moment or a bad one or what?
Well, what I was hoping is that I would feel relieved that I had done the right thing, because that's my main focus in life, is to do the right thing, both the thing that's healthy for me and the thing that can improve the world a little bit. You know, as you know, we've talked about it in the past. I see this as a wave of, you know, paying my debt to society. So on the one hand, I do feel relieved that we've had this conversation, but at the same time, it feels like my temperature's gone up and I'm literally sweating right now.
Yeah, so you can't experience the good parts of it yet. Maybe you'll feel better later, because right now you're in that place inside of yourself where all this ugliness lives, so it's still not a comfortable place to be. But the fact that you've opened the door to expose it to us, I just think is a hugely powerful thing to have done for you and for us. And I think it's going to have benefits. I think you're going to feel good about it. I hope so.
Well, part of that, me even getting to the point where I was feeling sort of brave enough to do this, Todd, was because I figured that you would be a supportive person about it. You know what I mean? You're a smart guy. You have a lot of emotional intelligence. And I knew that it was a safe place for me to talk about this, even though there's God knows how many people going to be listening to this. I knew that it was just, you know, me and you talking, and when we have these conversations, I try to forget about, you know, the fact that this is going to air and just talk to you.
Yeah, well, that's the right thing to do, but that's what, that's where the power is. I think that when you're willing to let people see who you are instead of the face that so many people put on, you know, the external cover story that we give to the world, when you're willing to be seen as a real live human being, that's when you're set free and have the chance to come to terms with yourself. You know, what goes on in the outside, let me say it the other way, that integrity is living on the outside what you live on the inside, and that's what you're trying to be. You're trying to be a person of integrity. So modeling that is a powerful thing, both for us and I think for you.
Yeah. I'm hoping that later on when I'm sitting in my cell, I can have just, a big sigh of relief about this whole thing. Because like I told you early on, I was very distraught about this whole conversation for the past 2 weeks that we haven't spoken.
Yeah, it's funny, the silence... The silence had a certain magnitude that I hadn't heard from you off the air, and I was wondering what was going on with you. So I'm glad now I know, and I'm glad it turned into this wonderful conversation. We're about out of time. If you want to give us a closing thought, have at it.
Well, like I said, I just want to thank you for listening and being someplace where, you know, I could feel safe to say this, because and I think it's a huge step for me, and ultimately, I'm sure by the end of the day, I'm going to be really happy that I did it.
Brent McCall, you are awesome. This was a massively good conversation, and I feel like we're just at the start of our experience of doing this, so thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's it for today's After Six with Brent McCall, a monumental discussion. I'm glad you got to be part of it. Check out the posted interview on our website, the Todd Feinberg podcast page at WTIC.com if you want to hear it again. Stay tuned. Red Sox baseball coming up next on WTIC News Talk 1080.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.